there was a blog out there that was, I don't know if it's still in existence, but it was a college football blog. And, you know, they call universities that are like state universities, land grant universities, because, you know, the state was, the state, you know, gave them the land. And they called it, you know, landgrant.com.
I went to the first land grant university in the United States of America, Penn State University.
Oh, there you go. The Pennsylvania State University. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We are in another new weekend. The first week of NBA is behind us, and it was a fun week, and we're going to talk a little bit about it right now. And joining us from Austin, Texas, is the one of the finest basketball minds in Austin, is Kurt Goldsberry. I wonder, I could say Texas. I could say the Southwest United States. Is Kurt Goldsberry?
What is up, dudes? How are you?
Joining us from Los Angeles, the newly married. And by the way, Kirk, you know, Ulm is a fan of Star Wars. He came, he entered his wedding. I really approved of this because, you know, while it is the bride's day, you know, the groom should get a moment. And Ulm, you made an entrance at your wedding to the Imperial March.
No. Actually, that would have been nice. I actually did the throne ceremony, medal ceremony song.
Oh, that's right. All right, my
at the end of the first Star Wars.
Okay, sorry, my fault.
Come on, Brian. Come on, Brian.
My fault. But I'm sorry. I thought it was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I thought
a little geeky, but you know.
I defy you to watch that and think that it was geeky. I thought it was cool.
Actually, the plan had been the violinist was – I wanted the violinist to play Big Pop of Notorious B.I.G. The violinist could not do that. We were in Aruba, and I guess there was only one violinist on the island, even though I provided the music sheet chart for them.
Stop pulling back the curtain. Just take the compliment.
I will.
I also like that he thought he could find a violinist in Aruba who could play Biggie. But all right. So, the Lakers and Clippers had a pretty interesting first week. You were at the games. What did we learn about those two teams? I know very early, but what did we learn about those two teams in the first week?
I think the Clippers, obviously, let's take away last night losing to Phoenix. And clearly the Clippers just
I should say we're recording this on Sunday afternoon. It'll be up Monday morning, but just in case.
Okay. Yes, Saturday night. Their loss to the Clippers. Lost in Phoenix. Let's take that out. I think the Clippers are going to be really good. And I think, that, you know, obviously when Paul George is not even back yet, but defensively that team – what they can do, Patrick Beverley had said after they just demolished the Warriors and just to just ruin the Chase Center grand opening. Patrick Beverley was like, what we wanted to do was just grind them down, throw waves of defenders at them, and we're really scary. We're very, very scary. And I think he's right. What Doc Rivers can do with the versatility of that team when they're motivated and on point, which I think he'll be able to do and keep them for the most part. I think they're going to be really good. The Lakers, I think, are going to be good too. But I think the Lakers, there's going to be a lot of tinkering as we go on. I think Frank Vogel is going to be changing his lineup quite a bit, depending on matchups, depending on injuries, depending on different things. I think they can see what Anthony Davis looks like at center. And I think Anthony Davis, as the season gets on, goes along. Perhaps we thought that Anthony Davis really didn't want to play center. I think Anthony Davis is going to start getting more and more comfortable with the idea of playing center. And then we'll see how Kyle Kuzma will be involved as well.
Yeah, we'll take sort of one at a time here. By the way, the Clippers, good on defense for sure. Nobody's going to doubt that. But the 130 they gave up to the Suns, I realize it was their third game of the week, but I don't know about that one. That was a big number. That was a big number, and the terrific, terrific night for the Suns after just a brutal loss in Denver. And you know, Rubio didn't play. Obviously, Ayton was serving a suspension. and they get the win, put up 130 on the Clippers. So.
You know, one thing that popped out of that game, though, is that Kawhi played 32 minutes, and it now looks very clear how the Clippers are going to play him. Doc Rivers plays him in the like the first six, takes him out at the 6 minute mark through the first, second, and third quarters, and then in the fourth, I guess, uses him here and there depending on how close the game is. But he played 32 minutes, and then Doc, I think, is admitting that there's sort of some sort of like minutes that they're following with Kawhi Leonard as a plan for the remainder of the season. And we also have to see load management wise if he's going to play in back to backs at all.
Well, they certainly have the depth to do it, don't they, Kirk? I mean, you know, for as good as Kawhi Leonard has been, Montrezl Harrell has had a spectacular start to the season, and Lou Williams is just being Lou Williams. I don't think they should have a problem playing him those minutes. I just question how many games he's going to play. It doesn't really matter, in all honesty, if he's healthy. But they're so deep that's something that they should definitely be doing that with Kawhi going forward.
Well, yeah, and I agree, and I think Ohm said it earlier. This is without Paul George. I mean, you know, they're deep without Paul George. Once he comes back, you know, one of those guys can sit a night, and the other one can be the alpha, and I think they'll be fine. I think going back to your original question, comparing the Clippers and the Lakers, it's pretty clear to me which one of these two teams has more questions around it right now and which one has more pressure around it right now. I think the move that they finally got AD at the five at halftime on Friday night was huge. I think from a spacing perspective, that just makes a lot more sense from a basketball geometry perspective. It still remains. I mean, can this team get enough shooting and enough offense with the current roster they have? And there's a pressure and there's a win now energy around the Lakers that it seems like the Clippers don't have that similar sort of pressure. And that comes with the territory of being the Clippers versus being the Lakers. But right now, I think, you know, it's very early to say, but the Clippers look very solid, bringing it back to that first point without Paul George already. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, so obviously it's well known that Anthony Davis, while he did come out last year, because I spent some time with him in New Orleans at the beginning of the season, and he basically did say, okay, I'll play center for this team. You know, this is because at the time they had Mirotić, who'd been great for them the year before, and, you know, it was clear that their best lineups were when he was playing center and Mirotić was playing power forward, and they could stretch the floor. And he did raise his hand and say, hey, I'm going to play center. I'll do it. I don't like doing it, but I think it's the betterment of the team. Then he gets traded, gives up his trade kicker, essentially so that they can, you know, sign, JaVale McGee and DeMarcus Cousins. You know, I'm not sure that it necessarily was 1 + 1 = 2 there, but he certainly was under the impression he was not going to have to play much center and said as much. And, you know, I get it. It's one of those things that, you know, over the years you have conversations, you have so many conversations with NBA players, and there are certain things that you don't understand as an NBA player, but if enough players tell you, you can understand. Like, one of the things that players have always told me is how important it is for them to feel the ball. They like to feel the ball. And even if that means just asking for the ref to hold it, or, you know, not going four possessions without feeling it, they really think it matters. And when you talk to a guy, you know, guys who play down low, they talk about how much it takes out of them and how much more difficult it is to guard a more physical player. That, okay, you do it for a day or two, it's not so bad. You do it for 6 months, and it can take an incredible toll on you. So I respect Anthony Davis when he says he doesn't want to do it. I understand it, especially for a guy who's had injuries in his career. Having said that, you don't have to be a basketball expert to see that this is the way that the Lakers should play. And of course, in their second game, when they go to it, he did play center for a few minutes in their opener against the Clippers. But, you know, when he goes to center, they just look so much better. And I think they are short of a ball handler. Now, Kyle Kuzma, who's getting close to coming back, he did say at practice today, Sunday, he said, you know, you're going to see when I come back that I've been working on everything that we need, that I'm going to be a ball handler and I'm going to be an outside shooter, and you're going to see that I'm the missing player. And I, you know, respect him for that. I don't necessarily believe that, but to get your best players on the court, you're going to need Kuzma to play some of that role, and you're going to also need Anthony Davis to play some center, and you're going to need LeBron to guard some power forwards. That's just the fact of the way the team is built.
Yeah, I mean, give Frank Vogel some credit. Like the other night when they're playing Utah, and it was like a game that was straight out of the 90s. I mean, I think they were in their 30s, their mid 30s, like in the second quarter at one point, and it was like. Basically, they start the second half, and you see Alex Caruso starting, JaVale McGee to the bench, Anthony Davis at center. And they figured that, like, look, that we need to get Rudy Gobert out of the paint. He with two centers out there, he was just going to be able to stay in the paint all day long. And I think Anthony Davis, you know, the first two games, he has not looked comfortable. I mean, game one, he only had two shots in the fourth quarter against the Clippers. Unacceptable. He's got to get more shots, more touches. And I think, you know, as much as LeBron James spent the preseason talking about this is Anthony Davis's team, and then you still see Anthony Davis kind of looking at LeBron and still feeling his way, which obviously is going to take a while. We thought their chemistry was going to be on point after what we saw in the preseason. And then game one starts off, and it looks like they still need some court time together to learn one another, because that China trip certainly set them back. You know, I talked to some Lakers that felt like they set them back for a week because they had no practice time. And so basically you're looking at now Anthony Davis trying to learn LeBron James and vice versa. LeBron also trying to be more aggressive. He was much more aggressive against Utah than he was in game one against the Clippers. And I do think Kirk is right. The Lakers, you know, obviously there's the element of LeBron. Any team with LeBron, you feel the pressure to win. But I think the coaching staff, too, it's a new coaching staff with Frank Vogel, Jason Kidd, Lionel Hollins, Phil Handy. I think they also feel the pressure to win right off the bat, too, especially with a schedule that's considered soft, you know, in the very beginning.
Yeah, that's true. Their first 20 games are favorable. We've talked about this before. Teams that are high-value TV teams typically play easier schedule early on because their tough games are backloaded after football season for television purposes. That is, and also just in general, the flow, because the demands on Staples Center through the winter, especially with the Grammys and stuff like that, the Clippers and Lakers tend to have a few more home games early in the season. There have been a few years, well, this has really been lopsided. But there's certain things that happen with arenas, like, you know, the Spurs, for example, with the rodeo trip. You know, Kirk used to work for the Spurs. The Spurs schedule feels like it's completely set up around the rodeo. The entire use of the – I think the arena is, you know, there for the rodeo, and the Spurs just happen to play in it.
That's right.
A few months. But the Spurs schedule is always sort of lopsided because they don't play a home game for 3.5 weeks in February. And the Lakers get preponderance of home games plus some easier games early on, and in this tough West, like, they got to take advantage of it. You know, it's not a situation like, you know, there's some East teams that, you know, they have a bad 7 or 8 games. You know, it's not so bad. You can't really afford that in the West, so the Lakers have to take advantage of it. But Kirk, knowing what you know about the way the Lakers are designed, do you feel that this team as constructed can seriously challenge?
Yes. I mean, you start with this cornerstone of that construction, Brian, which is a man who has been to the finals 8 of the last 9 years. Okay. So you start with that and you say, that's a great starting point. Anthony Davis is the second part. But it's not a given. And we alluded to it. The West is a bloodbath this year. And the big question for me is about shooting and spacing. And that's why I think the AD to the 5 Friday night is noteworthy. This quote that McMenamin got from Danny Green for his piece yesterday about the second half, once they had AD at the 5, I think is very telling. Danny says, we were faster, I think. We were rotating. We were moving. AD defensively was a monster. We did better with the pick and roll coverages and talking and communicating and switching. Weak side was there rotating. We got some steals, got out running, and got some easy baskets for us on the offensive end. If you hear Danny saying stuff like that, it's pretty clear where he thinks AD should be playing.
Right.
And once you have Danny saying that, you get Alex Caruso, as Ohm said, spacing the floor. LeBron was quoted in that same McMenamin piece saying, man, having AD at the five definitely allows us to create more driving lanes.
He said there's a lot more space for me. He openly said that.
So, I mean, when you talk about construction, I think it's there. And look, it's going to take a few games for all of these pieces to come into place. I think the construction's there. The question is, there is a championship needle somewhere in this haystack. The question is, will this team be able to find it?
And Brian, I'm told that, you know, AD is definitely warming up to the idea of playing a lot of center. I think right now Vogel he doesn't want to lose any of his players, his veteran players, as far as like, you know, if he were to start AD at center eventually, you know, he doesn't want to lose JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard. One of those guys is going to look at not playing a lot of minutes or minutes they thought they were going to have, especially look at JaVale McGee. Didn't play the entire second half against Utah, sat there and he didn't complain, but he certainly didn't look happy either. And I think Frank Vogel, being the new coach, he's trying to figure the rotation out and make sure he doesn't lose anyone early on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Vogel spent the preseason talking about how he still wanted to play with a center and he didn't want to switch, that he hated switching defenses, that he thought it was sort of a new age trick, and AD talking about not playing center, and then literally by the second game, they had from July on to figure all this out. In the second game, they're talking about, AD at center actually works, which, again, anybody who knows basketball.
Yeah, well, one more thing on that, Brian. AD was put on this planet to play the center position in 2019. I mean, he is perfect for it. But you know what? It might be a night-to-night thing. It might be a matchup thing. And the last thing I'd say on it is, like, the Utah matchup is perfect. When you're playing against Rudy Gobert, you need to extract him from the paint. And when you do that, those driving lanes are not just more open, that there's no Rudy Gobert at the end of them. And that's a big difference. And when you're playing Jokic, maybe it's a different strategy. But I think that having AD to play the four and the five is potentially just a great set of choices for the Lakers this season.
Yeah. So I just think the Clippers and Lakers are they're just such a fascinating group. I do think the Lakers will be spending a lot of time trying to figure it out. But the Clippers will have some adjustments to make when Paul comes back. But I think you're going to see teams sort of on different planes as the season goes along. But all that really matters is where they are at the end and how they're going to play. Big factor.
What did you guys think of Kawhi Leonard, the playmaker, and all the assists he's been racking up on those pick and rolls?
Well, Kawhi can pass. I mean, it's been the biggest part of his development over the last few years. And Doc Rivers is going to run pick and rolls. We know that. We knew coming into this season that Kawhi was going to be in more pick and rolls probably this year than he ever has been, and get more defensive attention. And so it's actually imperative that he makes those passes. I think it's encouraging to Clippers fans, and it's unsurprising to those of us who watched Kawhi grow up over all these years, that he's actually added that element to his game. He's not quite LeBron as a passer yet, but you know, when you get doubled, you got to make them pay, and he's been able to do that.
Yeah. Also, here's a factor. Montrez is looking like maybe one of the best role men in the league on pick and rolls. He has worked hard to develop that part of his game, to develop his footwork. He's a killer right now on pick and rolls. Mm-hmm. So you've got to take advantage of that. You know, he's a great screen setter and he's a great role man, and you've got to use that. And then obviously at some point their best lineups are going to have him at center, Paul George out there, and Kawhi is the ball handler. And Paul George showed last year he can be an excellent high volume 3-point shooter. Mm-hmm. So again, you do not have to have a master's degree in basketball to know that when you need it, if you run a play where you have the floor spread with Paul George, and you know, if JaMychal Green, I mean, I don't know if he's going to shoot the ball as well as he has early on, but you have even another floor spacer out there like Landry Shamet out there with Kawhi, and you run a pick and roll and you make the defense commit to which side they're going to defend, whether it's going to be an extra body to Kawhi, whether they're going to have to devote an extra body to the pick and roll, and Kawhi will pick you apart. This is essentially just the way that LeBron played, for all those years. He became a point small forward. They put shooters around him. They spread the floor. This is what they did in Miami, and they said, LeBron, go make plays. And it, with LeBron running the pick and roll, it's almost mathematical. He knows he's like Peyton Manning out there. He sees the way the defense reacts. He knows exactly where to go. And that's the way I think Kawhi is going to play. And Kawhi has a chance to be as good at it as LeBron does, especially because Kawhi's ability to shoot from the mid-range is superior to where LeBron was at the top of his career. LeBron shot some high percentages a couple of years where he was over 55%, where he was devastating. But Kawhi, I think, is almost unguardable on mid-range shots because of how high he gets up and his way he holds it over his head. So I think that's the way they're going to play. Hey, real quick, do you like the NBA?
Yeah, I like the NBA.
Naturally. I mean, I would even say you borderline love the you love the Clippers.
You're talking to me, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking to all of our listeners, but I'm talking to you as well. I'm always talking to you one way or another. Could you use a new or an upgraded watch?
I can. I can use a new upgraded watch. Are you giving me one?
Well, you know, Christmas is coming up, but if you can't wait that long, you should check out Tissot. And there's a couple of different reasons. Number one, Tissot is a huge supporter of this podcast. And, of course, they're a huge supporter of the NBA. So that's one reason right there. Secondly, they've got a broad range of high-quality watches at attractive prices. They're stylish, trendy, and innovative. And they're going to look good on any wrist, even Andrew Hans, who sometimes wears a lot of really interesting clothing to match with. Tissot brings performance, style, and offers painstakingly accurate timekeeping and very stylish and authentic watches. Each one of their timepieces delivers quality performance and traditional luxury. They pride themselves on precision style of all of their lines, classic, sport, and contemporary. They make a great variety of touch watches to sports to classic and trendy. As I said, Tissot is the official watch of the NBA. You can shop their latest timepieces at us.tissotshop.com and, of course, at jewelry stores nationwide. You can follow hashtag ThisIsYourTime and Tissot.us on Facebook and Instagram for more information about Tissot. So a couple of surprises from the first week. I mentioned the Suns. Monty Williams has them, you know, just sort of just a whole breath of fresh air. And I just feel like Ricky Rubio will make – you know, Rubio doesn't have to be an all-star, but just being a competent point guard – I think will help them. That said, they have impressed me significantly for where they're playing. It's still very, very early, but they had a pretty challenging week in terms of their schedule at Denver and then a back-to-back with the Clippers, plus the fact that Rubio got hurt and the suspension, and they just handled their business. Booker had a terrific start, had 30 in the win over the Clippers. And Frank Kaminsky, who, I mean, when they signed him, I was just like, okay, I mean, fine. I was so sort of unimpressed with Kaminsky. I have no idea whether it'll last, but, you know, he's going to get a lot of minutes here. He's not starting at center. That's Aaron Baines. He's starting at center. But Kaminsky's going to get a lot. He's going to be rewarded with minutes with eight and out, and he put up 18 in his first game. I mean, I don't know if this is going to last. Like I said, I keep qualifying it, but you have no choice but to be impressed with the Suns, Kirk, early on.
Well, I had the distinct honor of sitting next to Monty Williams for a year when we were both at the Spurs watching games with him. And Monty is not only a fantastic human being, he's a terrific basketball mind. And I think early returns are pointing to the simple fact that this sort of troubled organization in Phoenix may have made the best coaching hire in the offseason in Monty. And, you know, he is a huge change for this organization, but the personnel has changed too. You mentioned a bunch of it, Brian, but, you know, Kaminsky, Dario Saric, Tyler Johnson is out there. Aaron Baines, you mentioned, and Devin Booker looks like he might be making the leap this year, and there's just a different energy around that Phoenix team, and I think it was Michael Lear who tweeted it this morning, but like, is there a better early season win for this team than beating the Los Angeles Clippers Saturday night, scoring 130 points, doing it with one thing that jumped out to me at that box score was half of their shots were threes, downright Houston Rockets-ish. And that's a new look for this team. And they're built with Ayton out,
and you put Kaminsky in. Kaminsky had 19 on Friday in Denver. You sub Kaminsky for Ayton, that enables you to shoot even more.
You're spacing for those driving lines too, and that's a great point.
I mean, count me as one of those guys. When I saw their offseason moves, I was scratching my head saying, what are the Phoenix Suns doing getting rid of TJ Warren for basically nothing, you know, and trying to clear cap space and then going after all these bigs, you know, giving Ricky Rubio all that money, understood that they needed a point guard so they could shift Booker back to shooting guard. But it's like, I was like, okay, they already have DeAndre Ayton, and obviously now they don't for 25 games, but I was like, let's see him grow, and all of a sudden you go and give money to Baines. You go and get Frank Kaminsky. You go get Diallo. And I'm thinking, God, they have way too many bigs. But it looks like this team is going to play really hard now for Monty and also Kaminsky. What can you say? Frank the Tank. I mean, he hurt the Clippers badly the other night.
And then they also kept Oubre. You know, they gave him a two-year, $30 million contract, which he probably hoped for more, but – you know, they hedged a little bit on him, but they got him at a number that was reasonable, and he's off to a good start. And although he got fined $10,000 for saying something to an official, but you know, Oubre gives them some extra firepower, and you know, you put Oubre out there with Booker and Rubio. Rubio's going to get those guys shots, so they should be improved. They just still surprised me. Another team that surprised me the first week of the season were the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler. He missed the first three games because he had a child. I think it's his first child, but he had a child born and spent time with his family. And the Heat go out there and have a couple of wins, including winning in Milwaukee on Saturday. And one of the early season storylines that I'm going to continue to highlight, I've talked about it a little bit so far, is this guy, Kendrick Nunn. Kirk, you watched the G League. Were you aware of him in the G League last year at all when he was with Santa Cruz?
I got to be honest. No, not really. I studied him the last couple of days because, you know, he had some monster games in the preseason. And then, like you're saying, he's now, I think, the second or third leading scorer on this Heat team in a world without Jimmy Butler. But Kendrick Nunn, you know, Pat Riley's done this before. Brian, you know this more than anybody. He finds players, and he gets them assimilated. And Kendrick Nunn looks like he belongs in the NBA. Great left-handed sort of get-your-own-shot athlete. I think – this isn't a fluke. I'm not saying he's going to average 20 points a game, but he's an NBA rotation player, and good for them. And just one more thing on that Milwaukee game. What kind of team goes down 20 against Giannis and the Bucks in the third quarter and comes back to win? That's a gritty team right there.
Eric Spoelstra team. I mean, I'm so mad at myself because when we were doing our predictions, I was like, I wanted to pick Spoelstra as coach of the year, and I did it last year.
I did.
I was like, I can't pick Spoelstra 2 years in a row, you know. And for him to do like Justice Winslow, we knew was going to kind of be more of a playmaker this year. But I mean, his first game was excellent, and then last night he shoots 4 for 16, but still has 10 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists on Saturday night. He's playing great. Bam Adebayo is my pick for most improved player year, and I also didn't think he had 8 assists in him. That was pretty eye-opening for me. And then, of course, you know, they got the rookie Tyler Hero, who looked great up in Sacramento in Summer League. So, you know, this team, they're going to play hard. You always know Miami Heat team is going to play hard. And when Jimmy Butler's back out there, I mean, I think it's going to look like an old-school Miami Heat team.
Yeah, so they started, okay, they're starters. Now, granted, Dragic played a lot off the bench, so he played starters minutes off the bench. But nonetheless, they went into Milwaukee and started Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn, two rookies, and, you know, got the win. Now, just to follow up a little bit on Kendrick Nunn, all right, he went to Oakland University, was a big-time scorer there, didn't get drafted, kind of comes from the same sort of lineage as Kay Felder, who was the undersized guard who came out of Oakland and played for a couple of teams, I think the Bulls and the Cavs, and, you know, didn't get drafted. And he played last year for the Warriors D-League team. And this has been happening in the NBA for the last few years. And it happens so often now that I'm going to be honest with you, I don't even really pay attention to these signings. But like the last week of the season, any teams that have open salaries, open roster spots, sign guys out of the D-League who they think have any potential at all and sort of pluck them away from their host teams. And they signed like 2-year contracts. And so they come and they play like one game, get one game check. And remember last year the Heat were playing, they were dancing along the lines with the luxury tax. So they waited, I think, till literally the last day of the season. And they signed him to a 2-year deal where he didn't really get any of the money the first year. He got like one day of salary. They keep him through summer league. And, you know, a lot of times this happens when the guy gets cut in training camp or what have you. But they signed this guy. And you know who could use this guy right now? The Warriors. The Warriors could really use him.
Exactly right.
In fact, as we look early in the season, you know, the Warriors made another deal. When they were making all those moves to clear out their space, you know, they gave away Trevion Graham to the Wolves. Graham was with the Nets. He got shipped to him in the D'Angelo Russell deal. They held him for like 15. They held him and Shabazz Napier for like 15 minutes, and then shipped him to the Wolves. Trevion Graham has been terrific early on for the Timberwolves, and I'm thinking to myself, they could use Trevion Graham too. but anyway, just get back to Kendrick Nunn. Like he scored 44 points. He scored 40 points in a preseason game. And one of the reasons why the Heat have, you know, exiled Dion Waiters, they suspended him for a game, and they didn't even bring him on the road trip that they're on right now, is because they like this guy. Because, like, you know, is that this guy is so good. And so, okay, maybe I'm at risk here of talking about him a lot, and then he disappears, and we don't remember his name by January. But it's emblematic of what's going on with the Heat. And obviously, everybody was impressed with Tyler Hero in summer league in the preseason, and so he'd have something here. You know, I don't know what their top end is, to be honest, but this is what they do. They develop guys, and just do yourself a favor and make it a point to keep an eye on Kendrick Nunn. He is a special talent that I didn't really know about, and I've paid attention to him the last few weeks, and we'll see. I mean, there's some people who, Kirk, believe that the Heat are a top four team in the East. They believe that in the preseason. I watched them actually play two games in the preseason and was really impressed with Tyler Hero. I didn't see them as a top four team, but certainly a team bearing worth watching.
And it looks like, and it's very early, but it looks like they have a little bit of an identity, this athletic grit, like sort of grit and grind mentality, like a pain in the rear end to go try to beat them. And I think, you know, Ohm brought up Adebayo as a potential most improved player. I think that's a great call. And he had a phenomenal defensive play, I think, chasing down Eric Bledsoe in that comeback. And it was just emblematic of that sort of brand of intensity that they bring. Another stat that jumps out to me from that game, Brian, is I just looked it up. Milwaukee Bucks don't give up 130 points in a game. I don't care if it's overtime very often. I think last year they gave up 130 at home one time, and they gave up 131 in that Heat game, 121 in regulation, in case you're saying, hey, that was whatever. They gave 121 points in regulation to Miami Heat. I think there's two things that are coming noteworthy out of that game. Miami, we talked about, but Milwaukee usually plays better defense than they played in that game.
Do you think they miss Malcolm Brogdon?
How can you not? I mean, yeah. he's a great player, and I don't think people realize how influential he was to the culture there.
Well, they had a great win, though. They had a terrific win in Houston in game one. So, yeah. I mean, Giannis fell out of the first two games.
Yep.
Which I can't remember any star falling out of back-to-back games. The sixth foul was a rough call.
In the Houston game, right?
In the Miami game.
Okay.
It was a rough call.
I thought it was a bad call in the Houston game, too. It was a rebound, and it was a light foul, especially for a superstar fouling out of the game.
But still, though, he's got he can't foul out of games. He fouled out, too. Another young guy, and I'm the first to admit, okay, I am not Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz. I don't watch these guys. I don't watch these guys play a whole lot in college, and I don't really watch them. I don't really take summer league too seriously. So I make my evaluations in the preseason and regular season. I watched the Bulls. I watched bits and pieces of the Bulls' first two games. I did not see their game against the Raptors on Saturday. I have been super impressed with Coby White, who was their number one pick. I think he was about the seventh pick overall. I would say that watching him is very entertaining. And again, I apologize if you're a diehard North Carolina fan and you've watched every second of him play, but I can't believe how great he is at getting to his spots on the floor. And he has a scorer's mentality, and his ability to move, to create space, to like say, I want this 12 footer from the right side, I'm going to get to that spot, is like, wow. Like, and you can tell, like, the defenses aren't respecting him yet. They don't realize, and he did not have a good game three, but he had pretty good games one and two. And so I, right off the bat, really like him as well. He's a guy who's got my eyes open on him. And, you know, Markkanen had a great opening game. You know, there's other stuff going on with the Bulls, but really liked Coby White. I don't know if you guys have gotten a chance to see him at all, but I really like him.
He has the green light too early on. I mean, they got a lot of point guards, but like even like on Saturday night, it's his first game. He was 3 for 14. You know, and then the game before that, he had 16 shots. So he certainly has a green light. And look, he's got the pedigree. He went to North Carolina. He was an exciting player there. So. It's good to see, and he was going to be up for that Memphis game against John Morant as well.
Another thing that stood out to me early on, the basket attacking DeMar DeRozan, going to the rim with reckless abandon and throwing down dunks. By the way, Kirk, we underestimated, and I can't believe this wasn't on the NBA schedule, the Davis Bertans return game.
Yeah.
The Wizards played in San Antonio on Saturday, and as you may remember, the Spurs basically had to give Davis Bertans away to the Wizards to clear space to sign Marcus Morris.
Yep.
And then Marcus Morris reneged and went to the Knicks, which Pop still seems salty about.
As he should, because Davis was one of his favorite players, and he'd still be on the Spurs if that deal had never happened. And by the way, Marcus was in town for the home opener. So they've now played both of the teams involved with that controversy. But DeMar, as you mentioned, really came up huge in crunch time in a game that shouldn't have had much crunch time against the Wizards at home. The Spurs end up winning. I think DeMar had their last five shots, last five field goals. It was 5 for 5 down the stretch, including a huge shot at the end. But
right. So, but Bertans went 7 of 7 and 5 of 5 from three.
Dude, yeah, he would have had a perfect game if he didn't miss a free throw.
The Latvian laser is, yeah, when he gets going, he gets going. I watched him real closely when I worked with the Spurs, and he is one of those heat check guys. And when he makes the first two or three, like, look out, he just gets the look in his eye. And that last night was a great example of that, and a great example of why the Spurs and Coach Pop would be a little bit disappointed that he's not on their team anymore.
How about Isaiah Thomas coming back? 6 for 14, 4 for 10 from three, 20 minutes off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best game Isaiah's played in over a year. I don't remember. I don't think he did much with the Nuggets last year. If he did, it was in garbage time, because he basically only played, he only played a few games where he was part of the rotation, frankly. It's kind of a perfect team for him, because they're going to need somebody to score, and they have no expectations, and they, they'll let him do it. By the way, Hachimura had a good game against pretty good Spurs front line. They're a rookie, 16 and 8 in San Antonio. So Kirk, the Spurs, they could still extend him, and I'm sure that they have had some talks about it, but they no contract extension for DeMar DeRozan. They did pick up the option in LaMarcus Aldridge's contract. And they did extend obviously DeJounte Murray, but no extension for DeMar DeRozan. What do you think his future is there?
It's a big question. It's a big question. I think, look, sometimes the silence could be like thunder, you know, and you mentioned it, the extension or the finalizing of LaMarcus's last year in that same time period and no extension. I think one of the things that people need to realize with DeMar is that the Spurs youth, they are overstocked in the backcourt. They have Lonnie Walker. They have Derek White. They have DeJounte Murray. They have Bryn Forbes, who had a phenomenal preseason. All these guys ready to play minutes.
Patty Mills.
How could I forget Patty? Yeah, Patty is one of the best sort of off the bench sparks. So how do you find minutes for all these people? And, you know, DeMar's in that same position group too. So I think that is one of the big contextual things people have to realize and why this is such a tough decision going forward for the team. And, you know, DeMar, you know, do they need another few years from another huge mid-range guy? I mean, I think that's the question that the Spurs front office is asking themselves right now.
Well, he's got an opt-out next year, right? I mean, his contract is a pretty big number, but and the Spurs very rarely make mid-season moves.
Very rarely trade, very rarely make mid-season moves. Exactly right.
But I mean, the thing about DeMar too, what San Antonio could be considering is also like, you know, what have you done for me lately? And in that first round against Denver, you know, he didn't have the best game seven against the Nuggets.
Well, let's just be honest. His playoff record is spotty.
Yeah.
You know, and his spotty playoff play combined with Kyle Lowry's spotty playoff play made the Raptors a volatile team in the playoffs. That's one of the reasons they moved on from him. So I don't know. Just one of those things. You know, he didn't extend. A whole bunch of other guys did extend their contracts. He was playing with a lot of force early on. Just something to bear watching as the season goes forward. Now, unlike the guys who had 2 years left on their contracts, had a deadline to extend. Bradley Beal being one of them. He does not have a deadline to extend. He can extend whenever. So up to June 30th, I think. So, you know, but typically you don't see contracts, you know, you don't see extensions mid-season that often. It does happen, but it's not routine. So that's something to keep an eye on, especially as we look at a possible trade market and free agent market that's thin.
Hey, Brian, let me ask you a question around these extensions. It seemed like there was a flurry of extensions this year by some people that we didn't really expect them to extend at that number. Do you think there's uncertainty around the league about the salary cap? And some players sort of being more conservative and going with these extensions that otherwise might have tested the waters of free agency?
You know, I think that's something that players are saying, but I just don't think that we know. There is a projection that in 2021 the salary cap is going to jump. Now, there's a new television deal that was signed in China that is a significant boost to that and would have affected the cap. That deal has already been signed. If that, if something happens to that, it could affect it, but I don't think that the cap is going to fall dramatically. I mean, it seems like, if you're trying to talk yourself into doing an early extension, that fact could, you know, help push you over the goal line, but I don't think it's going to be an impetus for it. I've actually been a little bit surprised. I understand why Draymond did it without question. Bradley Beal surprised me, for as an example. I understand, but you know, we're also seeing a lot of short extensions. You know, Joe Ingles signed a 1 year extension. Kyle Lowry signed a 1 year extension. You know, those were kind of surprises. Eric Gordon signed a 2 year extension. Some of these I didn't sort of see coming. We haven't seen extensions like that in the past. Mm-hmm. They're just sort of mini extensions. So it is, you know, it is a, you know, it may also be a bit of a reaction to guys seeing free agents have terrible injuries. Now, Clay and you know, Clay and Durant still got their money, but you look at a situation like DeMarcus Cousins. Right. You know, if you're on the fence, that could definitely sway you. That could definitely cause you to think about it. So it has been surprising. Hey, did you guys listen to the Woj pod last week? I don't even know how he was able to get Draymond Green and Warriors GM Bob Myers to even sit down in a room together. But then he got them to talk about some pretty complex and sensitive subjects, including everything that went down between Draymond and Kevin Durant last year. There was even a moment in that podcast where you could tell Bob was asking Draymond some questions he'd never asked him before, and we were let in on it. So definitely check that out, and the Woj Pod just in general. So, of course, you get the Woj Pod, same place you get the Hoop Collective, and wherever you get your podcasts. And be on the lookout for what Woj has coming up next week. Okay, so one other guy early on, and again, I was qualifying it by saying we're in the first week, but how about Trae Young, guys?
Oh, oof. My God. Could you start a season any better? First of all, they got the two wins, right? But he has been on fire. I mean, this is the player that the Hawks dreamed of, these first two versions, the first two games with the win in Detroit and against Orlando. But doing everything, not just making threes, passing the ball really well and making twos. 77 points in two games. That's phenomenal.
I think I saw his effective field goal percentage was like over 70.
Yeah.
So who would you guys take right now, Doncic or Trae Young, to start a team?
Oh, my God.
I think it's not that easy anymore. Like, remember? Because when the draft happened, we were all just like, oh, my God, did Atlanta make, you know, a bad decision that they're going to regret? And you're just like, huh, Trae Young is looking every bit like the player they were hoping he'd be.
Well, I was – so the Hawks won 29 games last season, and I was sort of feeling like – I thought they would – I don't think they're going to be 500, but I thought they would approach 500 this year. I thought, 37, 38 wins. And a couple of people that I talked to earlier in the season just slapped that down. They were just like, no. They're not going to win much more at all. And so I was, you know, I feel like I've kind of been, you know, carping for them a little bit. Not that I think they're a playoff team. I just think they're going to be way better. And I think Trae to me, in the little training camp that they had for the select team, for Team USA, I thought he looked spectacular. I thought that the senior team was going to call him up to consider him. They ended up calling up Derek White instead. Within 24 hours of that happening, he left with an eye infection. I suspect one had to do with the other. I mean, I'm sure he did have an eye infection, but I'm not sure he had to withdraw for it. But I think he was disappointed, and I understand why. Sort of the two things that happened with – I'm not saying the Team USA would have mattered if they had these guys, but cutting Bam Adebayo instead of Mason Plumlee was a stunner to me, because I thought he looked really good in what I saw, and I also thought they needed that energy and athleticism, that bounciness. And I also was really surprised when – you know, Trae Young didn't get called up and kept around over, you know, with Derek White. I mean, I understand why Derek White and Pop was coaching the team, but I thought Trae looked great. And so I was really energized about him this year. And of course, you're going to say, well, Trae doesn't defend. And John Collins, who's their other sort of young stud, doesn't defend. And I was like, yeah, that's why they moved up in the draft to get DeAndre Hunter, because right. they wanted a guy who could defend. And I'm super, super bullish on their future, and I'm even kind of bullish on their present. But I did feel a lot of people were coming along with me, and I still may end up being wrong. But Kirk, did you know? Do you think I'm wrong? Do you think they're not going to win that many more than 29 games?
You know, I think they'll be around there. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to pick how well they're going to do this year, because I think what's happening in Atlanta is they're. To your other point, is it's going to work. They're building a great core. It's a question of when. DeAndre Hunter, how good is he going to be? He's been very efficient so far. Kevin Herter looks like he's going to be a great off-ball shooter. Jabari Parker making a return to my life playing for these Hawks.
right.
So it's a strange group. There's a lot of questions.
Cameron Reddish is their other young rookie.
If it clicks, if Trey makes a leap, which it looks like after two games, guys, two freaking games, he looks like he might make a leap. But the other point I'd make is there's a lot of wins to have in the Eastern Conference. There are wins there. And I think their first two opponents are indicative of that. They beat the Orlando Magic and they beat the Detroit Pistons. Those are the kinds of games you play a lot of in the Eastern Conference. And yeah, I think there's a world where they get to 35, 40, 45 wins if Trae Young is this good of a scorer. If John Collins and DeAndre Hunter are really good complements to him. So I think they could get there. It's just it might not happen this year, but it's going to happen at some point.
There are two things I remember from Trae Young when we were at that team select camp in Vegas. I talked to him about entering next season, and he said that he got stronger in the offseason. You might not – with his body type, you might not really be able to tell, but he did add some muscle. And he said he needed to get stronger and to be able to take more hits. And the other thing, too, was he mentioned in detail just being in the second year, knowing what to expect, knowing how to deal with the schedule, knowing that when your body and your legs are going to get tired at certain points of the season, he said was going to be a huge benefit for him. And like you know, Kirk's right, it's only two games, but you can kind of tell the confidence is sky high, and that was sky high after All-Star last year, and it's carried over into this season.
So let me read you a quote. We want progress. We expect progress. We demand progress. And Lloyd Pierce feels it. That's the coach. Travis Schlenk feels it. That's the GM. And I feel it. That was a quote from Tony Ressler, the Hawks owner, over the weekend. So, wow, this team is not expected to make the playoffs or anything. We demand progress was uttered by the owner ahead of their home opener. So that's always fun. I always love owner press conferences early in the season.
Hey, they play just looking ahead, they play the aforementioned Miami Heat twice this week. I think a home away kind of deal, Tuesday, Thursday. That'll be interesting. We'll see a little bit more of where this team is.
If you've got a league pass, I advise it.
The Thursday game is TNT.
Fantastic.
Our friends at Turner.
Great job. check it out. That's my advice. Check it out. All right, guys. Well, thank you for your knowledge and expertise. Olm, look forward to seeing you do some more dancing. Star Wars.
Yeah, I got to start posting some of the pictures and videos.
Kirk, will you go please work on a heat map for Kendrick Nunn and please send it to me as soon as it's done. I want to post it.
I think I can do something for you. I got that. I think he's definitely one of the new names of the year. I'm excited to watch it, and I should go make a shot chart for him.
All right. Thank you, and thank you to Andrew Hahn for producing. For listening to the Hoop Collective. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.